Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Ben's been incredible. Ben's done a great job. He's been part of the transformation that fully, you know, we sat down in January and we talked about the goals for the offseason. And the goal was to completely rebuild my body from the ground up, to break it all the way down, to learn what we need to do, what we need to change, how we need to change the training program. And we rebuilt it from the very simplest steps in the foundation all the way up to where we are today. And he's done an incredible job, and I'm fortunate to have him as a good trainer. And it's, the staff here has done a good job, too. Mike Eubanks has done a great job implementing things from here forward. So I'm really looking forward to this season.
It's J.J. Watt and Seth. J.J. talks about building his body back up. I know people say with J.J., they're like, you know, three of the last 4 years, he hasn't been able to finish the regular season. And, of course, he came back for the playoffs last year, played really well in that Buffalo game, and then I think ran out of steam in that Kansas City game like the rest of the team did. This goes back even further for J.J., though. I mean, people forget that third Defensive Player of the Year season that he had in 2015, he was ravaged by the end of that year. I mean, the injuries started to pile up for him really midway through that season, and it's a small miracle that he made it through that season fully healthy, because he had the broken hand where he had the club fist. He had the groin injury that ultimately knocked him out for the season. The herniated discs that he ultimately needed surgery on that curtailed his 2016 season, he disclosed to us on back in the day on the Triple Threat doing an interview that was the first I think he had said publicly that started happening to him midway through 2015. So this whole thing with his body is unfortunately something for JJ that he was able to play through amazingly and still be the best defensive player in the game for a year in 2015. But since then, 2018's been the only season that he's been able to stay on the field all season long and through the end of the postseason. I think that's one of the biggest stories for the season for the Texans coming in is which J.J. Watt, how effective is J.J. Watt's offseason that he just had going to be in terms of setting him up to have a 2018 kind of season?
I think, and J.J.'s, you know, a few years ago, it was kind of refreshing because he got very self-aware about just what his situation was, you know, and he would just talk openly about, hey, like I can get up here and say the same things I've always said after these injuries. I understand why people are skeptical. And he, a couple points, he said he was skeptical himself, or he had doubts himself at times. I think one of the silver linings of this pandemic for guys like JJ will be everything he just talked about, which is because football itself wasn't a distraction, like these OTAs and these team practice days and everything, sometimes they're a pain in the ass as an older guy just because you want to just be working on your physical preparation, but there's only so much strengthening and speed work and whatnot you can do, or prehab and rehab and all that, when you're also trying to go out and practice football, because then you gotta ration your energy out somewhat. So because of all this, JJ was able to just sit up in his retreat in Wisconsin and just work on his body and all the imbalances and all the stuff that comes from being injured so many times. I mean, because I had a whole bunch of injuries, a slew of injuries in my last several years in the league, and I just each time along the way I felt myself get a little bit slower and a little bit off physically, and then that creates more injuries, and you get in this vicious cycle that I think JJ has been in for a few years now, where one injury begets another injury begets another injury. And when I was done playing, I went off to a place, Athletes Performance. They do a lot of combine prep with players and everything. And I spent 2 months just working out. This is after I retired from football. And I was amazed at, like, how off balance I was, like, how screwed up my body was. And I just spent 2 months getting everything back in line and everything, and I felt better than I had in a long time. I think JJ's been doing a lot of that type of stuff this offseason, and hopefully it does keep him healthier. The problem is he's also 30 years old, and he's got a bunch of prior trauma. And all that trauma, like, every time you get cut on, no matter how well you rehab, it's never quite the same as
Chips
it was
away.
Before. Yeah, it all adds up, you know, and accumulates to a sum total that can be pretty bad.
To Seth's point, here's JJ talking about how the quarantine has affected his workouts.
I would say not specifically to COVID for my own personal risk, but I would say that the quarantine situation has given me literally nothing to do but work out every day. I mean, there's nothing else you can do. You can't go out. You can't go to the movies. You can't go to eat. So the workout program for me this off season has been awesome because I've had a full off season to do my workouts exactly how I needed to do them. I've been able to focus on my nutrition every single day. I've counted every single calorie the whole way. Basically tried to fully transform my body from the beginning of the off season until now. And it truly has been one of the best off seasons from a workout standpoint that I've ever had. And I'm very, very pleased about it. I mean, my body feels as good as it's felt since probably 2014, 2015, somewhere around there. So I'm really looking forward to getting into camp and just getting to work.
Hope he keeps it together. Seth, NFL.com, a handful of their writers got together and put together a list of the best players, the best 30 players over the age of 30. Usually see these with the under, like 25 great players under the age of 25. You rarely see over.
This is the AARP version.
It's a great point.
As Brandy and I now get AARP magazine, I find myself a little disgusted at how much I enjoy the article.
You as well, eh?
So I will have wider doorways in this house that I'm building. Yes, I will do that. Ooh, motion-activated nightlights. Mm-hmm, I don't need that.
Mm-hmm, yeah. A way to get a wheelchair up a set of stairs. May need that someday. So do you, Seth, what would you say if I told you that according to this list, there are 11 players over the age of 30 or older?
Balderdash, I say.
They're better than
any other, old man's insult word I can use, yes. So that's cockamamie nonsense.
It's ballyhoo.
Bunch of ninnies on this list. Yeah.
Nincompoops. I'll rapid fire these. Some of them it's a little unfair. Like when you put quarterbacks, like, okay, like JJ could be a better player. And I think most teams would pick Russell Wilson over JJ Watt. You know what I mean? Like Russell Wilson's number one. Some of these on here, Seth, God. Some of these are getting me to feel older than I already am. Like, wait, this guy's 30 already? Because 30 is old in football. Of all sports, you know, 30 is not a lot of guys make it to age 30 in the NFL. Number two, Julio Jones is 31 years old.
Julio Jones, that old lick spittle.
feels like he's 27 still.
Julio Jones, who's still... he almost feels like a dinosaur in that he's a physical freak that can line up on the outside and just destroy everybody with his side and speed. Those guys have fallen out of favor in the NFL. It's all about the give me some shifty little bastard.
You tell me
or
if
give
I
me a Michael Thomas.
Tell me if I get to a name that's unfair to put in front of JJ Watt as a better player over 30.
Because and honestly,
these are all
in a
great
lot of,
players.
In a lot of these, it's going to be just flat out. Durability, right? Julio Jones has been very, very durable.
Right.
So it was. Wait, was he? Who are the other guys you mentioned?
Well,
already?
I'm going down the list. Russell Wilson one, Julio Jones two. JJ.
Russell Wilson is 30.
He's 30. He's actually he's 31. Actually, yeah.
God. Okay. Yeah. I got. Yeah. 31. Durability, production, all that.
Number three, Chandler Jones is 30 years old.
Chandler Jones.
He has turned into a sack machine the last couple of years.
Yeah, he is. I'm shocked that he's 33 also.
That's going to be a recurring theme, I promise you.
This is two segments in a row that are making me feel bad about myself. First circle of trust. And now guys like Chandler Jones, I'm like, I could have, if you had asked me, Sean, I would have said Chandler Jones is 27 years old. Yeah, Chandler Jones. Oh, Chandler Jones. Okay, if durability were not a factor, then I would say J.J. Watt's better than Chandler Jones.
Who would
Jones.
You rather
he's
have?
A,
point
he's
blank.
A more complete,
who would
I
you
would rather
have
Chandler Jones because of the durability factor.
Yeah.
So let's remove it because that's durability is going to trump J.J. in all of these. So I would say without durability, I still like J.J. better than Chandler Jones.
Okay, that's
if durability is not a factor.
That's a good way to do it. Aaron Rodgers is next. He's obviously well over 30. He's 36. That's a little bit apples and oranges.
Yeah, he's a little emo for my liking.
He is.
I like a guy that isn't going to whine and pout and complain and also can chug a beer. J.J. grew up in Wisconsin. He can chug a beer.
Here's
Aaron Rodgers is just an import.
Here's a good one. Cameron Hayward of the Steelers is number 5 on the list. He's 31 years old.
That is a really good one. If durability weren't a concern, I would say JJ by far. Like JJ can do all the things that can't. Every really good thing that Cam Hayward does, JJ does better when he's healthy. Yeah. Right.
Travis Kelce is 6th on the list of best players, best 30 players over the age of 30.
Flopper. Nope. Can't be on my list. I don't accept floppers.
I just don't want him around.
I don't know. Plus, not to mention, hey, listen, NFL officials, when a 265-pound man barrels into a 190-pound defensive back, let's not act and pretend like all of a sudden Travis Kelce is Shaq or something. It's ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. Matt Ryan is 35 years old. Again, apples and oranges. He's a quarterback. How about this one? This is another good one. Cameron Jordan of the Saints is 31 years old.
Oh, that's another really good one. But again, doesn't have the production or the same effect on a game as a healthy J.J. Watt. So durability aside, it's J.J.
It's J.J. Von Miller.
Oh, boy, Von. Now, Von did not get a boost from Vic Fangio's defense the way a lot of people anticipated.
Nope.
So now I almost have to say, too, based on last year's results, J.J., when he was playing, was a better player last year than when Von Miller was playing.
Yep.
So, yeah, that would definitely put J.J. above that. This is a big year for Von in that defense to figure out, all right, what was it? Was it just growing pains? What was it?
Number 10, Calais Campbell. These are good ones for comparison with J.J. Watt, man.
Yeah, every single one of them, I would still say, yes, when J.J. is healthy and playing, he's the much better player than Calais Campbell.
I agree with you. Yeah, he's better than those guys. Number 11, Matthew Stafford.
Oh, a quarterback. But I would take J.J. as a defensive lineman compared to Matthew Stafford as a quarterback. I'd say Matt Stafford is hovering right there around 10 or 11 or so on the quarterback power rankings, where a healthy J.J. is still higher than that as a defensive lineman.
Yeah,
so, J.J.
I would agree. All right, yeah, so J.J. 12. J.J., don't feel bad. The greatest player of all time, Tom Brady. Seth, 17th on the list.
Ooh. 17th. How do you think he's going to do this year?
Brady, I don't think he's going to be – I mean, there's some people thinking it's going to be 2007 all over again with throwing the ball all over the yard. I don't think that club is in his bag anymore. There's just too many weapons for him to not put up numbers, though. I think he's going to be pretty good.
You know, I know. He hasn't had weaponry like this in a long time, and I don't think he's lost that much on his throwing motion or whatnot that it's going to be – I think he's going to look a lot more like he did 2, 3, 4 years ago.
Over, under for him, 4,300 yards passing.
I'll go over on that.
Wow. Okay. That'd be a big
year. Bruce Arians, especially. Did you see Jameis Winston in that offense?
Yeah.
Now you're putting Tom Brady in it.
You're right. That's true.
Oh, goodness.
It's true. You know, Jameis went for over 5,000. You're right. All right. It'll be my last segment of the show is the next one, because I leave at the bottom of the hour to go get coronavirus tested over at NRG Stadium. Seth, you're going to do coronavirus commissioner with Landry in the 9:35 segment. We have not played the Dusty Baker story where he was asked about what Alex Cintron said to. The outfielder, Ramon Laureano. Apparently, the rumor was that Cintron said something about Tu Madre to Laureano, which led Dusty Baker into a long story about how he wants to use the phrase mother, and it turned out to be a big misunderstanding. It's a very funny story. We'll talk about the Astros brawl yesterday next. All right, I am heading out shortly to Texans training camp to go get my first coronavirus test. I'll report back. HIP ain't nothing to me. I'm going to report back to In the Loop at 11 o'clock with the results.
I feel like HIPAA is the government regulation that has the most misunderstandings ever. Like, every time I see somebody, like a player will reveal his own result and somebody will say, HIPAA? I'm like, an individual can say whatever they want about your Sean, you could go get a VD test and come back tomorrow and tell us whether you had VD or not. There's no HIPAA protection from yourself.
I get it, but there are so many people that misunderstand it that the misunderstood definition is what's become the actual definition.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get it. I know how it works, but I don't know that I'll get the results right away. I know the NFL is doing a lot of the point of care stuff now to where they can find out a lot quicker. I don't know exactly which test I'm getting. If I'm getting the one that gets sent off to the lab, or if I'm getting the rapid test.
I bet you're getting both. I don't know. I don't know why I'm betting that. I know the players and the staff. It makes sense that they have this point of care testing that's slightly less accurate than the one that they're using to send off. but it's immediate. So there will be 3% false positives, but then what they can do is say, okay, we've got three false positives. Let's give them a couple of the
point of care.
We'll test them a couple more times, and we'll send off the other, the more accurate one, and then we'll have a clue. So there'll be a few inaccuracies here or there, but the main benefit is that, yeah, you separate any potential positive results from everybody
else. Yeah, that would be a hell of a parlay for someone to fail two or three of the point of care tests, or for someone to get a false positive, you know, for that test to fail three or four consecutive times would be a remarkable butting of the odds.
I don't know if it would be that huge of a coincidence or improbability, just because when you have a false positive, I guess some of it is the fragments of the virus are still there from the earlier infection. So if you've got extra fragments compared to the average person.
Caused by something, gotcha.
You were tested, what, 2 weeks ago?
I was tested for the antibodies.
Oh, you didn't? Wait, you got just the antibody
well,
test?
Well, we donated blood.
Oh, okay.
So we donated blood. So part of donating blood, you get the antibodies test for COVID. So I didn't test. So I have not. I'm negative for the antibodies, which means I haven't had it.
Yeah. So if you test positive for the antibodies, then they want to take plasma and stuff, right, and try to antibodies from you. And then you get to be a hero. You could have been a hero.
I could have been. If I had caught the coronavirus in California back during my honeymoon, I could have been a hero by now.
But you couldn't. But you didn't do that, did you, Sean?
You didn't, did you, huh?
Thanks for nothing.
I know. So, Dusty.
Molly Coddle.
Okay. People need to realize that's a lot funnier than it sounds right now. All right. Dusty Baker.
You stupid hobbledehoy.
Dusty Baker was asked following the game yesterday of Alex Cintron allegedly lobbing an insult to Laureano about his mother, about Laureano's mother, was the reason why Laureano took a charge at the entire Astros dugout. It led into this exchange, which was one of the more remarkable exchanges I can remember in a post-game baseball press conference.
I've been told by somebody who's communicated with Laureano that Cintron mentioned his mother in a negative way. Alex Cintron mentioned Laureano's mother in the type of way. You've coached Latinos many years. You know what it is. And it's not just Latino culture. If that is true, how do you handle that? And how appropriate is it if you're one of your coaches?
So how do you know he said something about his mother?
Well, that's what I've been told. From somebody who's actually been in contact with him. That's why I'm asking you, what is appropriate? What's crossing the line?
You know something, when I was an A-ball, there was a good friend of mine on the team, and he was from Venezuela. And I called him, I called him mother, and he said he took it as if I was talking about his mother. And that isn't Latino culture. I learned the hard way, and he wanted to fight me, and I'm like, man, I'm not fighting you. I'm not mad at you. And he's like, well, I'm going to fight you. And I'm like, man, I'm not talking about your mother. You know what I mean? But he says, you said mother so-and-so. And so I learned that's, in the Latino culture, that you know, even if you say it in jest, or if you don't mean what you're saying, and just use it as another curse word, that in Latino culture, the guys don't like that. And like I said, I learned the hard way. I was 19 years old in A-ball, so I don't know, what he said. I doubt it I doubt that he would say that, because most Latin guys know that. So I guess you just got to check your sources, and I'll check with our guy over here.
Yeah, most Latin guys know that, which means he may have said it knowing it's that bad.
And then you post, as opposed to, like, Sean, I don't know what you were like with your buddies growing up, but we started playing a game of basically trying to insult each other by saying as graphic as a possible thing we could about the other guy's mother.
And we never played that game,
Seth. We know. It got bad. We were a close group of friends, right?
I would hope so. Kind
of, you know, but we're calling guys by their mother's name and everything. We definitely know. I definitely knew my friend's madre when I was talking about her. But like, whether it's a, regardless of all that, I don't know. It's still when it goes up to the board or when it goes up to the person. When it goes up to the person actually making the decision about whether to dole out punishments or not, I don't think that, like, all cultural differences aside, he can't just say, well, he insulted my mother. He said something about my mother, so that's why I was going to charge him.
charge the dugout.
And the judge is going to be like, oh, cool, I didn't realize that. I didn't realize he was talking about su madre.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, Sean and I, we're different. Like, I can say, well, quiero besar a tu madre, and I think you're going to be cool.
You think I'm good with that? I guess so. I don't speak Spanish.
I want to kiss your mother.
Oh, it is? Okay. It's mi padre's birthday today, by the way.
Oh, happy birthday.
P1 listener to Paul, or as this segment we would call him Pablo.
Padre.
Yeah, padre. Yeah, so happy birthday to P1 listener Paul Pendergast today. Seth, my big takeaway with Dusty and telling that anecdote is I have no idea how to figure Dusty is going to handle these next couple weeks if things keep going the way they are for the Astros, because 3 minutes before that, he snapped at Chandler Rome for asking what was an entirely fair question. Chandler Rome asked the question, do you think things are falling apart right now? And Dusty's first reaction was, man, you always ask negative questions. And I'm like, dude, you've lost 5 in a row. Like, that's all there are, negative questions right now. And then 3 minutes later, it's like he tells this long, winding anecdote about him calling a teammate a mother bleeper in minor league baseball, as friendly as could be, like your grandfather telling you a dirty joke on the front porch or something.
I did. You know what? I made the mistake once. I learned when I was a young player, I called a friend of mine, Junior Iwani. He's Samoan. And I was just saying, like, he made a really athletic play, and I said something about, like, you looked as fast as a Fijian or something like that. I was thinking about, like, there was a really fast Fijian rugby player that I was thinking about as I said it. And Junior told me, like, Junior came up to me and was like, hey, Seth, like, look, man, you're going to be glad I love you because don't say that again. Don't say that again. I'm like, what? But joking around, like, you don't joke around about the various Pacific Islanders and everything. Ah. Like I learned that lesson. I had no clue, right? I was like one of these kids over, like, in Asia that think that using the N-word is okay because they hear it on rap music, and they just completely, like, are completely clueless about it. That's what I was doing. I was very, very insulting to Junior in that situation because I didn't understand the rivalry between all the islands there is.
It's one tough culture, too, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Just a word of advice, everybody. Don't go pissing off a Pacific Islander. Those dudes.
Good advice. Good advice.
Those guys, man, especially, I don't know if it's because they grow up in this cauldron of, like, they're going to make it in the NFL, and they bash each other over there playing on the islands. But they're just tough as hell.
Yeah. Yep. On my way out, Seth, this is a tweet from Matt Hayes, who covers college football for, I believe, the Sporting News. He's with Bleacher Report. He used to be Sporting News. Power 5 AD just texted him 30 minutes ago. It's looking more and more like it's the Big Ten and the Pac-12 versus the SEC, ACC, and Big 12. As far as keeping the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 want to play football. The Pac-12 and the Big Ten are leaning towards shutting it down, and it is a standoff right now.
Yeah, and that's where, like what did we say? It's geography and politics kind of jibe with that, right?
Yep.
Between the Big 12, the SEC, and the ACC tend to be in states that are a bit more, I guess, aggressive in reopening or what have you, and the Pac-12 and Big Ten, different.
Different, yeah. So there you go. Seth, I am heading over to NRG Stadium. Landry is jumping in with you. You're going to do some coronavirus commissioner commendations and censures with him and chop it up for a segment before In the Loop. I will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m., my friend.
All right, buddy. Good luck. Don't jerk your head. Don't sneeze or anything while you're getting tested over there.
Good advice.
You don't need a Q-tip in your brain.
No, you got that right. You got that right. All right. He's Seth Payne. I'm Sean Pendergast. I'm jumping out. Landry's jumping in. I will see all of you tomorrow at 6 a.m. as we continue to cover training camp for the Texans here, which is going on now on Sports Radio 610. And I'll jump in with the guys on In the Loop around 11 o'clock today. See you tomorrow, everybody.
Sean Pendergast is at this moment rocketing towards Energy Stadium so he can make it in time for his COVID test, because he's one of the few media members allowed into Texans training camp this training camp. So we're privileged to have him there. I'm privileged enough to share this segment then. And a guy that's going to do overtime before his actual clock has even started today. Landry Locker. Landry, how the hell are you?
Oh, I'm doing awesome, dude. 1 month till the season starts. We got all kinds of stuff going on with the Astros. This is a lovely time to be alive. Lovely time to be alive.
Are you regretting at all your commitment to do 60 Astros postgame shows so far, now that the season has gone the way it is? The Astros, who are currently third in the AL West.
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, it sucks because it's not the standard that we're used to, but the last few months we've been stuck at home watching the same Netflix stuff 25 times, longing for sports. I'm fine with it. It's good to experience the heartache.
This is where I am with the Astros right now, Landry. If this were a normal 162 game season, I would probably not lose a single second of sleep over all of this. I'm trying to be the calm person that's telling everybody, like, hey, it's a long season. It's a long season. It's not really a long season. They're like a quarter of the way through this season.
They just got to forget about the A's right now. They just need to finish second place and get into the playoffs at this point.
I know,
the A's are done, so this is second place. That's what we're looking at now.
Stop it. You
can't
say that.
You
can't. Look, okay, let's see. The Astros are 6-9, so they're exactly a quarter of the way through the season.
Yeah.
They're a half game behind the Rangers. That hurts. It hurts at the Rangers right now. That bothers me more than anything, is that now the Astros are in a neck-and-neck race for a playoff spot in this weird season where the top two teams in each division are going to make the playoffs. That bothers me. I guess if I had to ask you, which one of the guys will break out of their slow starts first? I mean, Springer and Bregman are on their way to doing it. Altuve is the one that's just been the most, disheartening. And he's not as bad as he was early on. But, like, which one of those guys do you think will genuinely emerge as, oh, okay, this guy's for real again?
I think it's going to be Springer. I'm concerned about Altuve. I'm very concerned about Altuve. It just seems like he's pressing. I think he might be taking this sign-stealing stuff harder than people are taking into account. I really think he's – I thought he got the most unfair treatment nationally from the whole thing, and I think they deserved all the smoke they got. But with the buzzers and all that type of stuff, I just think a guy who's really pride himself on playing the right way – playing as hard as possible. Now all of a sudden he's like a villain. I really do think he's taking it very hard.
You know what's weird, Landry? Brandy and I both thought the same thing. I don't know if it's something about the A's stadium, or maybe it's some kind of weird psychological effect of him struggling right now. I have never in the last few years at any point thought, wow, Altuve is really small out there, isn't he? Like, he's just Altuve, right? Other teams, it might be a shock to him. There's something about this weekend where I'm watching him at the plate, and I was just like, he looks tiny. Is the A's catcher like 6'7" or something?
He is not.
I don't know what it was. I feel like I was letting him down by having that impression of him, but I've never been struck by his size. Like, going back until maybe like 2014, I really haven't thought about his size all that much.
Yeah, he's in a bad spot. He's in a very bad spot. I don't know how you get out of this. Maybe it's just going to be a this year type of thing, but I think there's something mentally going on with Altuve. I don't know. I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel for Altuve anytime soon. I could see everyone else figuring it out, and I think we'll see spurts, but something's not right with Altuve up there.
You know what? The one thing I'm hoping is that maybe somehow that little scuffle there with Laureano sparks something in them to where, like, as a crew and as a group, they get back to basics. In a weird way, it'd be a little bit like when AJ Hinch went after Girardi in 2015, and it kind of turned everything around for them, and that's when all of a sudden the Astros were like, all right, screw it, we're not taking it anymore. Now, that's after they had been just a bad baseball team forever. This would be something where maybe that'll kindle something in them, and they'll remember, like, all right, we just got to get back to being ourselves. Like, we got to have fun out on the field. We got to not act like we're on an apology tour or something, and just get after it.
What did you make of that whole thing with Citron? Because I know Lopez has a hot take on it. I'm kind of with him too. I think at this point Citron needs like a maximum suspension. I think if you're a hitting coach in this situation, no matter what, you can't be the guy that is appears to be the aggressor or coming out of the bench, because you know how it's going to get covered. Just from a PR standpoint, I just think having a hitting coach during COVID going out there yelling at opposing players is just a bad look for the Astros. That's the last thing they really need right now.
I don't think, and we talked about this between Sean and I, I don't know if the desired effect of having Dusty Baker come in was that in the course of a couple of weeks there'd be two bench-clearing confrontations, that at least part of the confrontation was sparked by a coach himself talking smack to a player on the field.
Right.
Like, I thought you brought Dusty Baker in to be a guiding hand and an even keel and all of that. And so far, right before the Joe Kelly incident, he's telling Joe Kelly to get back on the mound, you little effer. Now we got Cintron talking. And I honestly, okay, like, as he tends to do, Mike Meltzer had a very serious, like, basically even-keeled take about all of this. Meltzer said four things. One, I don't think Castellanos was throwing at Laureano. I don't think anybody does. You know, Sam. I think even Laureano himself doesn't think. What's up, Lane? Hey, buddy.
That's my whole column. I just posted a column on Sports Radio 610 that you pretty much summarized right there. I would encourage you to read it.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay, good. Everybody go to Sports Radio 610. John Lopez has been writing.
You're good, you.
Basically, Hemingway-esque columns over the last several weeks, ever since the COVID started. So go to sportsradio610.com and check out John Lopez's column that he wrote this morning.
Yeah, but you were talking about the
the other thing was, okay, Laureano, you can see how he's being pissed about getting hit twice, but it was Laureano gripping the baseball, and this is where I can understand where maybe this is where Cintron maybe started feeling like he had to back up his guys. Even though it was a young pitcher in Castellanos, maybe he felt like he had to back up his young pitcher. Laureano's showing Castellanos how to grip a baseball. And that's when everything got really, really elevated. But Cintron, as much as I think Laureano is still the bad actor in all this because he's the one that charged the dugout, Cintron did the little come and get it, big boy.
Yeah.
You know, he did the little – I almost – more than the tu madre, I think the him doing the beckoning – the little come get it with his hands was that's should be beneath a baseball coach that's asking for it. So I don't think he should be suspended a whole long time for it.
Especially in this situation, though. I think it's ridiculous. I think even Dusty, just from a managerial standpoint, I think all of the reservations and all of the warnings that you got about Dusty, I think they've been front and center. And it's not just from, you know, what you're talking about with the instigating. I mean, to me, the decision he made on Friday was probably the most moronic coaching decision I've seen in a long time. And I'm going back 6 years. Like, I haven't seen Bill O'Brien do anything that made that little sense. I haven't seen anyone do anything that was as dumb as him pinch hitting Toro for Tucker. And it just shows an inability to really think for yourself, because Toro is actually better against righties than he is lefties. And Tucker, I mean, he's awesome against lefties, and he's not as good against righties. And you pinch hit him with the go-ahead run on third in the 10th inning, it made no sense. And from an evaluation standpoint, where you kind of feel like there aren't World Series expectations this year, you need to evaluate Kyle Tucker in those types of situations. And I just thought from the data standpoint, it made little to no sense. And then from the evaluation of Kyle Tucker, it made even less sense. And you had to clear your bench. I thought that was one of the worst decisions that I've seen in a while from a coach, just based from every area that you make these evaluations. It was awful.
I think I do like your nickname, Alfred Blue Toro, for Abraham Toro. I think everybody – I haven't seen really a great argument yet for what Dusty Baker's infatuation is with Abraham Toro. And I feel bad, just like with Alfred Blue. I used to feel bad criticizing how heavily used Alfred Blue was, because Alfred Blue was a hell of a guy. I really liked him, you know, and I felt like he tried his best. He just wasn't the guy that the Astros coaches thought that the Texans coaches thought he was. And, yeah, that's the feeling you get with Dusty Baker and Abraham Toro. One of our listeners says, no, Landry, that's the guy we want doing that. Would rather him be suspended than a player or anyone else. Don't want anyone thinking the Astros are going to take other players' bleep, the S word. This is the thing about that. As far as the Astros taking crap from other players, Landry, guess where the Astros are right now in being hit by pitch?
Third.
Well, that's third in the AL, as Blum pointed out on the broadcast. They're 10th in the league. 10th in the league at being hit by pitch. And, like, there is not the other players in Major League Baseball are not going out there and beating Astros players the way a lot of fans dreamed they would, or that a lot of even baseball commentators thought they would. I think for the most part, it's like you should expect. Guys are out there trying to win baseball games, and a lot of them, especially the younger pitchers, just want to get by and aren't sending a message based on something that happened in 2017. I think there is something to the Astros either playing, I don't want to say with their tail between their legs. I think part of it is just they have so much youth on there that the composition of that team is different. You know, the offense is largely the same in a lot of respects, but even just the feel that you have in the clubhouse when you have that many brand new guys out there isn't going to be the same chemistry.
Yeah, it's hard to criticize too much, although I do think Dusty's done a pretty bad job in some areas. I'm not like just a hindsight 2020 type of guy, but I mean, my God, I mean, he might not be juggling things perfectly, but this is a tough ass thing that he's having to juggle with this situation, all these kids, all these injuries and all that type of stuff. So I want to go easy on him, but I'm probably not going to at 10.
Okay, so we're going to do a little something here, which is
I'm looking forward to this. This is what okay. I'm here for. This is what I'm here for.
It's time for the COVID commissioner. We've got I, the self-appointed COVID commissioner of Harris County, who stepped in and largely, turned this whole epidemic into something that's just going way better than anybody could have anticipated ever since I took the reins. And that's what I'm going to keep Baghdad bobbing my way into people believing. We'll start off with the good, a commendation for Yuli Gurriel. As Callis and Blum pointed out on the broadcast yesterday, he pulls his mask up on his over his face on the field whenever there's a base runner on first, despite the fact that it sometimes fogs up his glasses, but he's adamant about wearing a mask. Quote, "I do it to protect myself and my teammates and the health of everybody in this clubhouse," unquote. This is a man that represents everything about the American dream, is he not?
I don't know. I think there's a little more to it, though. I think it looks kind of cool, and I think Yuli always looks really cool. I think if he had, like, a crappy mask, I don't know if he'd be doing it, but I don't think there are too many guys that look more cool in their uniform. So I think if it's going to fog up the glasses, even if it's not 100% for safety, I think Yuli's always going to favor looking good on the field. It looks cool.
It does look cool, too. I think he's a hell of a first baseman. We've seen this. He's a Golden Glover. He's I also think, though, and when I talk about him being the ultimate American, he's an immigrant, right? He came from a communist country, and now he's enjoying living in this country, doing practicing his craft. But I also wonder, like, there's a little part of it is like, oh yeah, he grew up in a communist country where if you didn't do what the government told you to do, it was lights out, sayonara. And I think at least part of it is Yuli just kind of be like, how come everybody's not just doing what the government officials say to do? This is bad stuff happened back in my country when I grew up and this happened. So I don't know where you could take that any which way you please. In terms of the censures, first I am going to censure Laureano. Just because Laureano did, look, frankly, Landry, he did something you couldn't do in sports these days, which is something that's going to happen on a football field 150 times per game very shortly, which is he sparked a mass confrontation between two teams, violating all the COVID precautions that Major League Baseball has tried to enact. Although I will remind you that that's going to happen 150 times a game in a football game.
It is going to happen.
Like even way more.
It is going to happen. And let's be honest, it's good for baseball when this happens. I feel like the Astros are just kind of taking it on the chin. People are talking about the Astros. They're talking about baseball. So maybe Laureano did people favors, and maybe he gets suspended, which would be good for the Astros. Maybe the A's will miss him.
One more censure, and this is going to Cleveland Indians right-hander Zach Plesac, who went out with friends in Chicago on Saturday night in violation of team rules and the league's health and safety protocols. So he's on a road trip, decides to just go out and have a good old time with his buddies. The team, to the Cleveland Indians' credit, I'll give them a commendation, just grabbed him, snatched him up, sent him back to Cleveland so he can be quarantined for 72 hours and tested daily. This is, again, regardless of whatever you feel about the COVID virus, the protocol in baseball is pretty strict at this point, and Plesac potentially risking starting a hot spot just because he wanted to go out with his bros.
Yeah, I mean, he should actually just be kicked out for the rest of the season for doing that after what happened with the Marlins. Kick his ass out of the league.
But you're being heavy-handed with your punishments.
I am.
You want Cintron punished for an entire season?
I want Cintron to just go away. He's not doing a good job anyways. They're the worst. They're one of the worst situational hitting teams in the league.
Let me ask you real quick, Landry, because I look at you as one of the station's basketball experts. Are you feeling more optimistic, less optimistic, or the same about extreme small ball after the first half of the bubble is over?
More.
Me too, man. More. Okay, let me ask you this. Because part of my optimism is the fact that the Rockets have – they've got nine guys that can play in the playoffs now. They've got a nine-deep rotation. Do you think that this is the year that D'Antoni actually plays a deeper rotation in the playoffs?
I won't go that far yet.
I don't believe that when I see it. But I don't think it's even a matter of choice. He just flat out has to.
I think the bench will get a little shorter, but I don't know. I actually think they have more depth. I think they actually have more guys that can actually play. So maybe so, but I'll believe it when I see it with D'Antoni, because he does cut that bench pretty heavily in the playoffs. Although these are a bunch of wild ass small ball type of guys, which is probably his preferred style. He's been having to play like Capella and all that before. Sure. I believe in D'Antoni.
One of the best nicknames I saw, I just saw this the other day. Maybe people are using it, but it was one of those ones I read it, and it actually took me a couple seconds to remember or realize what they were saying. Because you remember, okay, D'Antoni popularized 6 seconds or less back in his Phoenix days. I saw one of the best names for small ball, which was 6 sevens or less.
There we go.
I like 6 sevens or less. That's going to be my name.
That should be a running game shirt.
I believe in the Rockets. I believe in Jose Altuve. I believe in the small of a woman's back. I believe in Landry Locker.
Okay.
Landry, thank you for doing overtime with me today. Everybody go watch, go look at the sportsradio610.com website during a commercial break and read John Lopez's article so you can be well-read and up to speed. Guys, have a great show. I appreciate you filling in, Landry.
Appreciate you, my friend.
All right, and that does it. I have no catchphrase to end a show on, so I'm going to say this. You're nothing but a bunch of cotton-headed ninny mongers. There you go. Goodbye, everybody.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.